good evening, everybody. I just want to give you just a quick 5-minute introduction, which is semi-related, but not really related to this year, but I think it's at least important for me anyway. First, thank you again to the Fines, wherever, where are they? Thank you again to Eitan and family, Yashar Koach, again, for serving us, for hosting with all the food. Really, Hashem should be mizakeh you for many, many years to continue giving hosting shiurim. And thank you to the Americuses for sponsoring the Ili Nishmas Chaim Ben Shmuel, whose sixth yard site is his Mosei Shabbos. Here's the introduction part. So I want to add in on my own also. I think as the Baal Ha Magid here. Hopefully I have a right to also be able to add in the Refuah Shleima here. I don't know if any of you here are actually aware, but I was actually in Chutz Laretz for 2 days over the past 4 days. I don't know if anybody actually knew this. But I was away for, I got back this morning. I was gone from Friday, Shabbos, and Sunday. I'm not going to tell you how much of that time was in transit, but my grandfather is not doing so well. He lives in St. Louis, Missouri. So I went, basically, they say that he's already terminal. Baruch Hashem, he's 96. He's lived a very full life. He was in the camps. And he survived. Baruch Hashem, built a family here. This is my father's father. But it seems like things are coming towards an end. Hopefully he'll live longer, but they already seem to say this is it's just a question of when and how long. So my brother, who lives in Elon Shfut, and I both decided to fly in to see him. Hopefully it won't be the last time, but we were assuming this might be the last time that we might be able to see him. So... it was a very quick trip, obviously. I couldn't get away for longer than 2 days. It was jumping in and out through New York to St. Louis. So I'll just share with you just one or two things from him. And again, so this was also the shiur dedicated for Refuah Shleima for Usher Ben Malka Raisel. That's my grandfather's name. Just one or two points very quickly before we begin. It was very, very interesting. He's, again, Baruch Hashem, he's 96. And... I looked at when I was there. It was a very meaningful visit, very, very meaningful visit. But I could see his body is not in such good shape anymore. Baruch Hashem, he doesn't have any serious diseases, but his body is very weak, very frail. He doesn't enjoy eating anymore. He can't even taste so much of the food that he eats. Anything, you know, physical goshness in nature is not really something which appeals to him anymore. Very frail. He can't really talk so much. He's not always there. He's sometimes a little bit confused on who we were and where we were coming from. But we could see what I noticed is Friday night when we said Kiddush, when we sang Zmiros, when we did Havdalah, when we benched, you could see his eyes lit up and he started, you know, singing along. Even though the rest of the time he didn't always know what was flying, he didn't even know which day was Shabbos. Every day was, is tonight Shabbos? Is tonight Yom Kippur? I don't want to eat tonight, I think tonight is Yom Kippur. A bunch of times that this has been happening over the past couple of weeks. But let me tell you, when his eyes lit up, he got so much of a geschmack out of, you know, our singing. We sang more and more Zmiros, and every one he kept singing, he was so into it. It just struck me as, you know, at the end of his life that you see that when the neshama begins to shine through, and the guf, the body is not really there so much anymore. It's already, you can see it's already on its way out. And that's when the neshama sort of takes over. The neshama, you feel what's inside of you that we don't always realize when we're, you know, hopefully most of us will have many more years to live. And for us, we don't always notice that, you know, sometimes the guf is sort of the gashmis is taking over our body, and the neshama can't break its way out. And it took me, you know, to look at my grandfather to realize this is how we're supposed to be also. We sometimes need to push over, to cover over the gashmias and really let the ruchnias shine through. Is a very difficult task, but it can be done. The neshama's in there trying to push itself out. It wants to get out. It wants to hear our words of Torah and our ruchnias. But sometimes, you know, the gashmias sort of takes over. And I think that just the connection to tzedakah here is that tzedakah is a mitzvah where we're taking our gashmias, we're taking our money, our hard-earned money, that we see as something which, you know, makes us, obviously we all need money in order to live, that's a given. But to take the same money and use some of that money for higher purposes, for spiritual purposes, to help other people, is really something very important, where we can take our goof and sort of squash it down a little bit and let our ruchnias, let our neshama shine through, even if we say sometimes, well, the ani comes, the poor person comes to our house, and we say, well, do we really want to help him? Do we really trust him? I don't know if we trust him, but At the end of the day, if we still give him anyway, even if he's not the most trustworthy person, even if it's still we're giving ourselves, and we'll discuss this a little bit later in this year, gives our neshama an opportunity to really come through, to feel that we're doing something spiritual, and to really sort of overcome some of our physical inclinations and our yitzhar har a little bit. That's one very, very important point that I learned from my grandfather. And again, he should live and be well for as much longer as he can. But I thought it was worthwhile to at least to start with that. Okay. All right. So last time we didn't actually get to the beginning of tzedakah shir number 2. Also, and you'll forgive me if I begin to conk out in the middle. You'll understand why. I don't know what time zone it is. I don't know where I am. Hopefully we should be okay.
So it's earlier in the day.
Yeah, it's earlier in the day. Yeah, when you haven't slept the night before either. You've been on a plane for 2 days over the past 4 days. Whatever. Okay. So we didn't actually start the sheet last time. We're going to go through hopefully most of the sheet, maybe a little bit more, and that should, I think, take us through the whole shir. Let's start. We're going to skip section number 1 for now and jump into section number 2, and then we'll come back to, I guess, sections 1 and 3 a little bit later. So this is a very, very interesting question when it comes to giving tzedakah funds. The question is, the general question is, what exactly do you give kedima or precedence to when it comes to giving tzedakah? Now, this question can take a variety of forms. The form that I want to focus in on now, the way that it's usually discussed in the Makaros, is which people that are in need that you would give tzedakah to, which people take precedence. Obviously, you can't give to everybody, so how do you establish some sort of level of priority system of which people come first, which people come middle, and which people come, I don't want to say last, which people come later down the totem pole. So we're going to start with the Shulchan Aruch here in source number 2. Again, most of this is going to be somewhat general, and again, we'll try to fine-tune it a little bit, but just the nature of this whole topic, obviously, as we've said before, is not something that necessarily lends itself to precise, exact types of models. And again, every person can be a little bit different, and every case is a little bit different, and it's not that the halacha is telling you here, you must absolutely do it in this form. This is the suggested way of giving tzedakah, but if you do things a little bit differently, that's your prerogative. Obviously, everybody who has money has the right to give the money the way that he sees fit. But in terms of the ideal halachic model, this is it should be something along these lines that we're going to discuss. So the Shulchan Aruch source number 2. This is in Siman Reishin and Aleph in Yoredeya. So it says as follows: Hanosim Levanav Uvnosav Hagadolim. Somebody who gives to his children that are older, meaning they are not She'enu Chayvim Zanosei, and you're not anymore obligated to support them. Which again is another discussion, which we will have more in the context of Master Ksufim, which will hopefully start, God willing, next week. Second?
When they're all six.
We're going to save that for next week, okay? We'll save that for now. Bizman Hazeh, it's usually assumed today by many poskim that today is, the time that that you're not obligated to support them anymore is closer to, let's say, post age 15, 16, or 17 or so. And the rest of that we'll discuss hopefully next week a little bit more. You're obviously correct. What you're referring to is that you didn't make that up. We're going to leave that aside for now. So anyway, if you give money to them, in order to teach the sons Torah, or to have the daughters who are not necessarily obligated to learn Torah to follow the Derech HaYashar, the righteous path of Judaism. Similarly, when you give presents to your, or gifts to your parents, your father in this case, and they need them, meaning they need the money that you give them, they do not have enough money to support themselves, Hareza bichlal tzedakah. Okay, that is considered to be included in tzedakah. The lo odel shetarach la'atim la'acherim, and not only that, but also you have to. They take precedence over everybody else. Va'afil eno bno v'lo aviv ela krovo tzarach la'atim la'chol adam. Even if it's not your son or your father, it's other parts, other relatives that you have. You have to make that. They have to precede every other person. Okay, before we go on, let's just stop here for just a moment and just explain what's going on here. Actually, no, we'll continue. I'll come back to this at the end. This is the Shulchan Aruch so far. The Ramah is going to sharpen this up a little bit in a couple lines, so we'll wait till we get there. So then the Ramah, the Shulchan Aruch continues. He says, V'achiv me'aviv kodem la'achiv me'imo. He starts to specify, he says, in terms of brothers, so your brother from your father precedes your brother from your mother. The poor people in your own city precede the people from another city. And the people from, what did I say before? Ania beso means the people in your house precede people in your city. The people in your city precede people in another city. Now the Rama adds in Vakavuim, but your Kriim Ani Hayir. What's considered to be people that are poor in your city? That's people that are set in your city. Kavuim, but your people that are fixtures in your city. They basically they live there. We're not going to go into the details of how you define who lives there, but generally speaking, people that live in your city are considered to be Ani Yircha. Behem Kamil Aniim Achirim. They precede others, other poor people. Habayim L'Shami Mekamos Achirim. That come to collect from other places. That is, the people in your city take precedence. The Yoshvei Eretz Yisrael Kodvin L'Yoshvei Chutz L'Aretz, and people in Eretz Yisrael take precedence over people in Chutz L'Aretz. Now the Rama comes in. The Rama comes in again. The last line was actually the Shulchan Aruch. Yoshvei Eretz Yisrael Kodvin L'Yoshvei Chutz L'Aretz of the Shulchan Aruch. Haga. Now the Rama comes in again and adds Parnasas Atzmo Kodemus L'Chol Adam. Your Parnasa precedes everybody else. Ve'eno Chayav L'Seis Tzedaka Ad She'elo Parnasaso. You do not have the obligation to give tzedakah until you have enough support to support yourself. And that, we will discuss that more next week in the Maser Kesafim context. Okay, that we're going to ignore for now. We mentioned it, I think, last year in this discussion of Maser Kesafim. We'll mention it again next week. For now, we're going to assume that our discussions of tzedakah tonight are when you have enough money to support yourself and you're looking to give tzedakah to others. So in that case, the Rama again reemphasizes, he says that, V'achakach yagdim parnasas avivi imos. Now the Rama basically spells out that after yourself, the next one in the list is your parents. Your father and your mother are next. Im heimanim, if they are poor, v'heim kodmin parnasas banav. They come before the parnasa of your children. So the Shulchan Aruch before did not specify which one comes first. Here the Rama says in the order is that the parents come first if they need money, if they are poor. And after the parents, then the next ones on the list are your children. That's v'acharkach banav. V'heim kodmin le'achav. They come before your brothers. They come before all the other relatives. Now the Rama adds in another interesting point here, that your relatives come before your neighbors, and your neighbors come before the people in your city. The people in your city come before the people in the other city. So the Rama is sort of repeating what the Shulchan Aruch said above and adding in a couple extra points to sharpen it up a little bit more. Then he says, the same thing applies if there are captives that have to be redeemed, that also would be included in this halacha, but we're gonna stay away from that for now. So if I had a backboard, if they had a blackboard here, or a whiteboard, I don't have one, but again, just if you want to write this down. So again, the bottom line, according to the Shulchan Aruch and the way the Rama sharpens it up, is again that number one comes your parents if they need. The next one in the Rama is children. The next one is other relatives. The next one is neighbors. The next one is people in your city, and then after that will come the people in Eretz Yisrael. Now, that's the general outline. Let's go to a few more specifics, okay? You have a question that might be answered, or you want to ask now?
Yeah, does this apply, just more questions, does this apply to Masa number one?
Yeah.
Same thing with Masa, same thing.
Okay.
With your premise issue.
Good. What do you mean by the second question?
No, same
thing. Same thing as your premise issue?
Masa,
So again, it's a Masa we're going to discuss more next week. Basically, everything we're talking about here is any money that you want to spend on tzedakah. Which would definitely include any of your master obligations.
Okay.
This would definitely include your master precedence as well, that if you have master money to give, so then this list will definitely be applicable to that too. Again, we'll discuss that a little bit more next week. Okay. But, yeah.
And then as far as the family is concerned, whatever, when else, you said the family's first.
Yeah.
But is that in a case where they're asking for money?
If they need money. It doesn't say that they ask for money here. It seems that if they need money, you can give them money, even if they don't actually ask you for it.
If you have a family member, you know that needs money.
Yes.
They don't ask you.
Correct.
You're obligated to give them first.
Yeah.
You give to the guy walking with
That's
you.
What it seems like, yes. And it makes sense. It's logical. Let's take just a couple more minutes to go through these a little more carefully, and then we'll move on here. Let's start with the parents. Okay, so the parents we mentioned before, again, hopefully this is not relevant to so many of you, but again, should be aware of the halachas here. The first point in terms of parents is based on the Rama, which is not on the sheet here. But the Rama says in the halachos of Kibud Avaim that l'chadchila it's actually better not to use tzedakah or maaser money for supporting your parents. Okay, that's l'chadchila. Ideally, it's not considered to be dignified to use maaser money to support your parents. So it's better to avoid that if you can. But certainly, if you need to, meaning if you don't have enough money to support them, if they need support, and you don't have extra money other than your maaser money, then you absolutely are allowed to, and you're obligated, as we saw here, you're absolutely obligated to make them first on the list. To support them before everybody else. Just one last point on the parents. This is going to be a debate later on, which again, we're not going to get to in so much detail, but just basically for the parents, most poskim seem to hold that you're allowed to give them all of your tzedakah money if they need it. Okay, let's say you have $3,000 or whatever it is earmarked for Maser money. If they need the money, you are allowed to give them all of your Maser money, which is not necessarily true, we'll see in a few minutes, for other Aniyim. It's not necessarily recommended for other people to give one person all of your money, but for your parents, most posts can hold that you can and maybe even you should give them all of that if that's what they need. Okay?
Only parents, yeah. Not children.
Correct. That seems to be. Again, children we're going to discuss more next week because that's, I think, the more common using children, using paying for your children for Maser money. I think that's a more commonly asked question.
No,
so I'm going to push that off. But
grown-up child.
Say again?
I'm speaking
with right, right, right. So that's a discussion. It's not nearly as clear whether the children can, whether the children are you allowed to use your all of your money for them. I think it's usually recommended not to. But again, that doesn't mean you can't use most of your money for the children. Again, I think we're going to discuss that more, a little bit more next week. Say again? For the parents.
Yeah,
so that's why, again, that's where this sort of intersects with the halachas of kibud avayim, that there's definitely an issue covered here. Again, the halachas are a little more complicated. We're not going to get into it now. The halachas really that you are not obligated originally to support your parents with your own money. Really, you can take the support from their money. The first halacha of kibud avayim is that you have to support your parents, but really it's supposed to be from their money. What we're saying here is that if they don't have money, then we would say that you have a mitzvah to use your own money. And ideally you don't use your tzedakah money if you don't have to, and if you do have to, then you can even use your maser money. Okay, let's go on.
It says krovim. Is that talking about specifically seven krovim?
So that's a good question.
Cousins, I mean, what,
it seems to me that anybody would be included. It's a good question. Again, I don't want to get into so many good details because, again, I hope... Hopefully this is not the most practical aspect of tzedakah for most of you, so I'm not going to spend time. There is a discussion in the postgame that exactly is included. And maybe some people say it has to do with Yerusha. Some people say it might include other people as well. That's a bit of a discussion. I mean, if it's practical, we could talk about it another time, but just for time's sake, I don't think we're going to get into the actual details there. The next one on the list after parents, which is not in the Shulchan Aruch that we read, is the grandparents.
It can't be with Yerusha.
Say again?
It can't be with Yerusha because
right. Good. Okay. Now you're saying. Okay. Good. There is a discussion. Some people did want to suggest that, but I think they may have modified the Yerusha list a little bit. They changed it a little bit. It's, again, I don't know if it's worth getting into now, just because it's not really the most practical case for most of us, hopefully. I hope. If I'm wrong, please correct me. We'll spend more time on it. Okay. Let's go on here. So the grandparents is next. The grandparents is based on the Ramah in Siman Reish Mem, which is again Hilchos Kibud Avayim, and there's a Chiyuv of Kibud for your grandparents as well. Not quite as great as your parents, but essentially we say that for grandparents also there is an obligation to honor them. And therefore, if the grandparents need money, right after the parents, they would be the next ones to, if necessary, to give them the tzedakah money.
Before the children.
That's what it seems like because of kibud avayim comes before the children and bnei banim harayim kibanim, so the grandparents seems to be that it actually would come first if they need. Again, I'm not going to go into all this now because we just don't have time. But if anybody wants to see more, so in a Taub's book here in English, they have a whole list here. They give you a list of the 14 different groups here. You can go. I can show this to you afterwards. You can go through all the details in the English and in the footnotes on the bottom. But again, just for time's sake, we're not going to go through all of it now. Okay. Next one, number three, after the grandparents is the children. That's what we mentioned before in the Ramah. That, again, I mentioned we're going to discuss a little bit more next week in the Maser Shir. But in terms of the Kedima, they definitely come first before other types of Aniyim if they need. Number four, we mentioned before other relatives. Again, we're not going to go into the details of exactly who and exactly how many and how close are they because, again, it's not so common. Hopefully, not for us, it's not so common. But again, the other relatives are the next group that we have to deal with, which means, again, if you know that your relatives are in need, absolutely, you should be spending your tzedakah money on them before you spend your tzedakah money on other aniyim that come from other places. Okay. After the relatives, then comes aniyei iro. Okay, the next category, as we said before, people in your city. So what exactly is, are the different levels of aniyei iro? So here, it's interesting that this is not on the Ramah, but the Chachmas Adam, the author of the Chai Adam, so he actually adds in another group here in the context of Aniyei Iro. He says anybody that you are close friends with, okay, anybody that are close friends with, then he's assuming that they're in your city. If they're not in your city, it's more of a question, but at least if you're in your city, those close friends would take precedence. If they need money, then they would take precedence over anybody else in your city. That would be the first level of Aniyei Iro. The second level of Aniro, based on the Ramah that we saw before, is your Shechinim, is your neighbors. The assumption here, again, is usually because you're usually closer friends with your neighbors than other people in your city that might live, you know, who knows how far away that you don't even know. So generally speaking, again, your neighbors that you know, they're going to take precedence over other people that you don't know so well, with the exception of close friends that we just mentioned. The third one in this group of Aniye Iro is other people in the city, meaning even people that you don't know so well. They're going to be the next group that they would take precedence over others, because again, there is some sort of connection of everybody that lives in the city. That is the section of Aniye Iro. What's the next one? So the next one we saw before is again the Aniye Eretz Yisrael. Aniye Eretz Yisrael, after the people in your own city, Aniye Eretz Yisrael take precedence. This is as we saw before. So here it's also interesting. Again, we're not going to go into the details of this now, but it's interesting that the Chasam Sofer, did I put this on the sheet here? Yeah, this is actually on the sheet. Let's read it on the sheet. This is in source number 5. So the Chasam Sofer, a very famous Chasam Sofer here, he says the following. He says, Ayin, this is the Pischei Tshuva, quoting the Chasam Sofer. Ayin Tshuva is Chasam Sofer, in a few different places. Sheharich Me'od, that he elaborates a lot. Diyesh Lahatim Yoshvei Yerushalayim Ayoshvei Yishayar Ayos Eretz Yisrael. That it's better that you should give the Aniye Yerushalayim precedence over the other Aniyim in Eretz Yisrael. Very, very interesting. That he thinks that Yerushalayim has a special significance even in the context of Tzedakah. Now, the Chasam Sofer then qualifies this, and this qualification we're going to come back to in a general context in a few minutes, but for now he says, V'chol HaKedimos Eino Ela LaHatim V'lo Lichos Nefashos. All these Kedimos are only for taking precedence, but not to be Docha. If somebody, God forbid, is actually whose life is in danger, then that would not necessarily take precedence. Again, we'll come back to this in a minute, but in these contexts of Yerushalayim, he says, V'alkenim Shneim Shavim. If everybody's equal, Shetzrichim L'Acheos Nafsham B'lechem Sar. Everybody has the same problem that they need to, you know, they just want to eat just, you know, bread and water or whatever. Then we say Nemar Zek Kodem. Okay, then we would say that Anei Yerushalayim come first. But if the people in Yerushalayim even just have a little bit of bread and water and nothing else, then still Shuv Eimahem Shum Tzviya Asher Gil Chalachav Mehayaros Acheros. Then they don't have any Kedima over anybody else that might be in even more needs than in more dire straits than Aniye Yerushalayim. Gamken Keshir Hazeh. V'shuv Me'anos Hashiv Tzarech L'Chsus U'mutaros Yesh Hakdama L'Muktam Ad Sh'yoshava B'shava B'zeh. Basically what he's saying is that every level down, the point is that if all things are equal, then Aniye Yerushalayim will come first before Aniye Eretz Yisrael. But if there is a more pressing need for any of the levels of Aniyim that are a little farther down, then really you could and maybe should give to those Aniyim first. We'll come back to that again. I'll elaborate on that in just a minute. But just here he mentions it in the context of Yerushalayim, so that's why I read it here. Yeah.
Precedence, does that mean precedence in terms of, let's say, you only have $1,000, right?
Yeah.
So does that mean you need to give the vast majority to...
So good. So give me a few minutes, we'll get there, okay? Give me a few minutes.
Precedence.
Give me a few minutes, we'll get there, and if your question is not answered, you'll ask me again.
One more quick.
Yeah.
All of the precedence is for Aniyim. So most of the Sadaka funds today are for lots of other things aside from the poor.
Okay,
education, health.
So we'll get to that. We'll get to that also in a few minutes. Again, I don't know if I can give you an absolute answer, but at least we'll mention the issues and maybe give at least a little bit of direction.
So if somebody comes to your door and they're from, say, Beit Shemesh, and there's a need that has not been met in your town, can you say, I'm sorry, I have to give
okay,
to you
so
my
good.
City
so this,
and send them away?
Good. So that goes back to what we said last week. If you remember, what we said last week is that, according to the Rambam, which is what we paskin, there is a halacha that you're not allowed in general, again, in general, assuming that he's trustworthy, or that you think that he might be trustworthy, that you're not allowed to send him away empty-handed. What that means, though, is that you would not spend, let's say you have, you know, $3,000 worth of, again, I don't know why I like that number, but I'll just use that one. Let's say you have $3,000 worth of masa money to give. Maybe I'm overestimating a little bit for, certainly for myself I am, but for anybody else. But to, again, just for, we'll use the number. Let's say you have $3,000 worth of masa money to give, I would not suggest, you know, giving this person $1,000 of your master money and give people in your own town that would need it, you know, $30 of your master money. Okay? But it doesn't mean that we're saying you should give them nothing. Again, we want to say that everybody that comes to you should give something. Again, give me a few more minutes and we'll hopefully address some of these questions a little bit more. For now, again, that's what the Chasam Sofer has, this interesting chiddush about the Aniye Yerushalayim taking precedence over the other Aniye Eretz Yisrael. The Arrestor Aniye Eretz Yisrael are the next ones in line. After Aniye Yerushalayim, they're the next ones in line. And then after that would be Aniye Chutz Laretz, meaning anybody in other cities that are not from your own city, that are not from Eretz Yisrael, that are coming from, you know, let's say you live in, whatever it is, in Brooklyn or Borough Park, you have plenty of people collecting tzedakah that go around to other places in America. Not so much, they don't quite make a Teretz Yisrael because they know that they're outnumbered here. But at least in the Chutz Laretz, there are plenty of them that go around. So those would be the last ones, after the people in your own city, after the people from Eretz Yisrael. This is the general list of Kedima. Okay, again, this doesn't answer all the questions. We'll give me a few more minutes, we'll get into some more details, and then we'll see what other questions come up that we can or cannot answer. Say again?
The halacha was set down at a time when it wasn't common for people to go from city to city?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it was less common than it is now, but it definitely seems to be that we mentioned before that there are people that come collecting. He says here that right in the middle of that Shulchan Aruch, it says that the people in your own city are proceed aniyim acherim ha'boim l'shamim mekamos acherim, from people that come from other places. So it sounds like it definitely was true that people came from other places, but it may very well be, you're right, that there weren't as many people that came in those times as there are today. Is that going to change the halacha? Not necessarily. But what it will change is, again, we'll see exactly how much money you're giving to different places. That may change, which, again, we'll get to in a few minutes.
Distance might make it so your city really isn't your city. Like, the whole Israel could be your city today, halacha, because it's not so hard to get from one place.
Okay.
The time it took to get from Beit Shemesh to here 200 right. years ago, because the time it takes to get from here to...
Okay, that's it. Elat is still pretty far away. Right? Elat is pretty far away.
When you talk about the fact that you know, you're presumably closer to your neighbors,
right.
today, you know, we're closer to people who live, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 miles away.
Good. Okay. So, again, this is all that I'll say for now. I think that it's still true. The halacha definitely still seems to treat people in your own city as being taking kedima, as we've said here. And I think the reason is because even if you say that it's true that we live more in a global village and there are, you know, we know people, you can drive, you know, 20 minutes or you're at the next city. But at the end of the day, the bottom line is we do have a responsibility for people that live in our own city. And just think about it yourself. Certainly, you would feel more comfortable, you know, supporting somebody, even if it was somebody that you didn't know. I shouldn't say that. In Yad Vinyamin, then you would feel comfortable supporting somebody in Beit Shemesh. Again, I'm not talking about somebody here that you don't know versus a close friend that lives somewhere else. That, we mentioned before, there's Chacham HaSadam definitely says there that close friends come first. In his case, again, it's not clear he was talking about people in a different city, but it could be today that maybe that I would hear. That even somebody who's in a different city but is a close friend of yours, could be that that person would come first before somebody in your own city. But in general, as a general rule, it's definitely still true that we feel more responsibility, and we should feel more responsibility for people in our own city than for people that live somewhere totally different. That's, you know, the level of Arevus is certainly, you know, more on a higher level here, you know, where you live than somewhere else. Yeah, okay. Yes, that's basically what it seems to be. That's what it seems to be. That, again, from the Ramah, is clear that he mentioned Shechinim, that your neighbors. It seems to be the person that you feel closer to, obviously you're going to have more of a responsibility to help them out before helping out the guy, you know, that's, you know, 10 blocks away that you don't even know. Okay? And again, it makes sense because he's the one that, you know, that you're the one that's going to be the most likely opportunity for, you know, to be supporting him than somebody else who doesn't even know. That's it's logical. Okay, let's go on. Again, we'll hopefully continue to address some of these questions as we go on in the next couple of minutes. There is a discussion, which we're not going to get into now. There is a discussion about the status of a Talmid Chacham. It could be that a Talmid Chacham might sort of jump over some of the lists of Kedima, of the other people, in terms of precedence. Today, it seems to be that we do not pass that he comes first. Even though it is a discussion, and originally some people did say that, but today, for a variety of reasons, which we don't have time to get into now, it seems to be that Talmidei Chachamim in general do not necessarily come first. The Pesachei Tshuva points this out in Sif Katan Gimel, in Reishon and Aleph, which I think did not get on the sheet. No, it's not on the sheet, but he basically says that people, even in Am Ha'aretz, in your own city, is going to precede somebody in a different city, even if the person is in a different city, is a Talmid Chacham.
Is that number five?
No, that was not number five. That's not, I didn't put that on the source sheet here. That's just Pesachei Tshuva and Sif Katan Gimel. What he says, though, again, we're not going to get into the details of this now, but if in your own city, if everything else is equal, and then you also have, you know, one person who's more of a Talmid Chacham, and one person who's more of an Am Ha'aretz, then already there's what to talk about, that perhaps the Talmid Chacham will get Kedima. But again, I don't think we have enough time to really delve into that point right now. I just mentioned that in passing. Okay, let's continue here. Let's now deal with some of the other factors which also might change the order or allow for other things that are also have to be thrown into the equation to give money to here. This is not going to be an exhaustive list, and it's also not going to be a direction of exactly how much to give and exactly in which case do you come first. It's just going to be a general rule, and we'll have to make of it whatever we do. After that, then we'll get into the questions of exactly how much to give to each category. Even if I tell you the one has precedence over the other, so how much does it actually mean that you give? That will be right after this next part. So unfortunately, I apologize. This part also did not get on the Shulchan Aruch here. The Shulchan Aruch is in Resh Mem Tesif Tesvav. Again, it's not on the sheet. I apologize. I'll just read it to you in the Shulchan Aruch. So basically, he says the following. So he says here that number one, the first case on the list. Actually, this is not even on the list here, but it's considered to be a davar pashut. That somebody who has a real situation of pikuach nefesh, of somebody's life being in danger, that is automatically going to take precedence over anything else. Now, what did that mean? That's a good question. That's, again, this is where it's not exactly clear. Doesn't mean it's somebody who's literally falling on his face on the street and is not going to live another day if you don't give him money. Is that what we're talking about? That would definitely be true. But again, the question is going to be, a lot of the cases today, organizations that give tzedakah to the poor, to the aniyim, you know, are these people that really their lives are in danger? Maybe they're also included in the category of pikuach nefesh. Maybe not. It's not clear. If I tell you that, let's say you should give tzedakah to, I don't know, what's a good organization to talk about that gives Meir Panim, soup kitchens? Second? Laman Achai. Good. So again, Laman Achai, would I tell you that would you say that the people that get money from Laman Achai are considered to be in the category of, you know, danger to their life? Are they really in Sakana? I don't know. I really don't know. It could be that some of them are. Anybody? Do you know?
Yeah, I would think some of them are.
Oh. So some of them are, so then you can make the case, and this is where things get a little bit more sticky and ambiguous. You can make the case that basically if Pikuach Nefesh takes precedence, then you should be giving all of your money to Laman Achai.
Even now, if they put themselves in that situation?
Who's they? The Aniyim themselves?
Laman Achai, for example, kidnaps Jewish women who married Arab husbands.
I thought that was,
yeah, we're talking about the same organization?
Yad Vashem, right? That's separate. Yad Vashem is separate, yeah. I get confused here, right? I know, I don't know who they're kidnapping over there. We're not going to go there right now. There's some other comments we can make about that, but we're not going to go there. But as a general rule, it's definitely important. If you know specifically that a certain person or a certain group of people that are, you know, God forbid their lives are really possibly in danger, in general, that is definitely something which could and maybe should take precedence in some form over some of the other tzedakahs that we're mentioning. Say again? 100%. It's the same question there also.
Because the money you are giving is not now saving someone. It's something which, with the system and all that, will save someone who today is not in danger.
So that's probably true for... Right, I agree with you, at least partially, for Magen David Adom and maybe for Hatzalah or Zaka. Maybe that's what we should bring in. You know what? If anybody's ever know Aral Otsur... So he's in Gan Eitzal here in the community. He's one of the heads of the executive directors of Zaka. I sometimes get around with him to Yerushalayim. So things are tough for them. He probably would tell me, I didn't ask him, but he probably would tell me that a lot of the things that his organization needs money for are also for Pikuach Nefesh, or in this case, maybe not. It's already after the Pikuach Nefesh, it's the post, which is maybe almost as important to give them a proper burial. And that's going to be a question, so that doesn't mean, does that mean that you should give all of your money to these types of organizations that might be serving people whose lives are in danger? So certainly, you're right, that if it's not something which is immediately in danger right now, there's some, you know, they use the money later on for some people that might be in danger, then maybe that would be different. But
there's sometimes people are collecting, they say they need some kind of surgery. It's not maybe imminent, like they're going to die this minute, near term, and they need large amounts.
It's a good question. So again, I would say that definitely means that, you know, if you know that all things are equal and that all the money is going to them, and that they're reliable, etc., that there's definitely, you know, worthwhile to give them some of the money. But again, because you don't always know what the money's going to, maybe the money's not, you know, unless it's going through a reliable organization, you're always going to have some questions about that. And this also doesn't necessarily mean that you should be giving all your money to that specific person. Maybe it means that, you know, you can give a nice amount of your money to organizations that have, you know, that are saving people's lives, and other parts of it not. Again, this is sort of a direction here. This is not telling you that all of your money or most of your money should be given to this purpose. It's a halachic direction that pikuach nefesh is important. This should be a halachic priority. Give me a few more minutes to just go through the other ones on the list here, and we can discuss more. The next one that's mentioned here, and this is here. This is also mentioned in. Rabbi Taub points this out in his English book. that basically anything we mentioned before, anything which is a more pressing need is going to take take kedima. This is based on the Shulchan Aruch and Rishon and Aleph Siv Zayin, which basically says that this is on the sheet. Here, this is on the sheet. Source number 3 on the sheet. You're obligated to give precedence to people that need food over people that need to be covered with clothing. Again, we don't mean somebody who necessarily has no clothing. It means people that have clothing that needs to be replaced. But the people that are hungry take precedence because they have more of a pressing need, and it seems to me that this is true even if otherwise on the list of people taking priority, this person is a little farther down. But if his need is more pressing, then it seems to be that we have an obligation to give him first.
Well, your father is naked. And you're someone who don't know,
right.
At that end of the world,
right.
Is hungry.
Right.
You should give to that person, who you don't know.
I'm sure you're giving me a very practical case that you're aware of here, right?
Someone's fault.
So the truth is that the case of the parents might be different. Okay, when it comes to your parents, it might be that even if somebody else's lives are in danger, it could be that for parents, many posts say that you still can give your parents most of or all of the money that you have. And the parents would be the exception to the rule, but from underneath the parents, from that point and on, grandparents, I don't remember. I have to check that whether grandparents are the same. I think they may not be the same.
But certainly the other relatives. Your child is naked, and you have someone who's hungry. That end
good.
Of the world, you can't give. You shouldn't give
right.
your child.
Right.
That's what
good. So again, the children also. There's a question. Some posts, I think, say that the children also might be exempt, but I think that's not nearly as clear whether the children are nearly in the same category. It's usually assumed that you can halacha l'maisa, and again we'll get to this more next week in terms of the maaser, but it's usually assumed that if your children need maaser money because they're in kolel and they're starving, not that I'm saying kolel is good or bad, but if they happen to be in kolel and they need money, then there definitely is room to say that you can give them a large amount of your money even over other people that you know about that are really going hungry. Yeah, but again, maybe we'll talk about that a little more next week. So that's again another important rule that sometimes will, again, you have to assess who's asking and who's needy, but people that come from outside, not from your city, that have more pressing needs, again, it could be that will override some of the people in your own town. Again, we didn't finish this yet, so just keep in mind, I'm not telling you that it means you should give all your money to them. It means that might mean that you should give a larger proportion. We'll come back to that in a few minutes. The other things that are mentioned here are the following. So the Shulchan Aruch mentions here, and again, back to Sifrei Yeshayahu Tesif Tezvav, which is not on the sheet, he mentions that a Gavite Tzedakah that has money should use some of the money to marry girls that are poor, that don't have enough money to get married. Okay, that's an important point, what we call Achnasas Kala. Okay, that is considered to be something which is, he says, She'ein Tzedakah Gedolah Mizu, there's no Tzedakah greater than that to help them get married. That's a very, very important need for tzedakah, and that also again has to be taken into the mix together with the other things, the other aniyim that we mentioned before. There's a very interesting question that comes up in terms of that, which we'll talk about a little bit more next week and the week after that in terms of maaser. And that is the question of today when people come around collecting for achnasas kala, achnasas kala, achnasas kala. Anybody ever heard this? And then you ask them, well, what's your achnasas kala going for? Is it going for the band? Is it going for their wedding? For the chassan's suit or for the kala's dress? And they tell you, well, no, we have to buy an apartment. An apartment costs $500,000. So. And you say, I see. I wish I could buy an apartment that worth that much in Yerushalayim. So that's a question. Has anybody this ever happened to anybody before?
No. Someone came to the door here for money for a couple getting married. Last time they were getting married, they said the mall, which is one of the nicer halls in Ramakan.
Wow. Oh, it's not an actual kanyan.
Not the mall.
Oh, okay. I hear. So that's a good question. So again, I wouldn't tell you that you should give that person a lot of money. The rules there seem to be that you give the minimum amount that they could get, that they can use for the minimum amount of what they need to whatever expenses it is. You don't have to spend enough money to make them rich or to give them the most expensive haul. And again, keep in mind, they're going door to door, so you don't have to give them all of your money for this either. They're expecting to collect from a lot of different people. That goes back to what we discussed last week. When you're already going to a lot of different people, you don't have an obligation to pay the whole thing yourself. But if you wanted to, so then that's definitely something which is an important tzedakah need up till a point. So Rav Zilber, the Oz Nidru, so I just saw today, this afternoon, he has a tshuva about this topic, and he wants to say that even in that case, that they're actually, maybe you should say that even to buy them an apartment, because otherwise the guy is learning on kolel, which is also important, and if he can't learn properly or they don't have a place to live otherwise, then that's also important in order to get married, to be able to spend money to buy them an apartment. Now, why can't you just rent them an apartment? So he says in places where it's too hard to rent, then that's why they have to buy. And even if it's a place where they could have rented, but he needs to have the menuchas ha-nefesh to know that, you know, he actually owns the apartment, he can make a little money off of it, or he doesn't have to worry about paying the bills each month. I don't know exactly. Osnid Bruce seems to say that that is considered to be a very, very worthy cause of Hachnasas Kal to pay for their apartment as well. Again, if you ask me, I don't know. I had a little bit of trouble with that shuva. Say again. So that's the question. He doesn't. So that was my immediate question. I read the shuva. I said, 1 second. I wish I had enough money to buy an apartment in Yerushalayim. I don't have anywhere close to enough money to do that. So I should be helping somebody else to buy an apartment. So where I'm sitting here living in, you know, the rented apartment, which is, you know, small and tiny, because I don't, you know, it doesn't seem right. But again, that's what he said. Again, I think there's room. Say again?
When was the shiva?
That's a good question. I don't remember. He was in Bnei Brak. So again, I apologize. I just saw it this afternoon, so I couldn't put it on the sheet here. I don't know when the shiva was written. It may have said there, and I just didn't bother to look. The other question there was also, maybe you can ask, instead of, you know, renting an apartment or buying an apartment in an expensive area, maybe you can rent an apartment in sort of a development area, which is a little bit cheaper. So why can't you do that? So he says, well, you never know if the Kal is going to agree, and she needs to agree also, and development areas are, you know, always questionable how good they're going to be for you. So he said, absolutely, you can use money even in a regular area. Say again?
The Kal can't, if it's to go to Yerushalayim, he can't force her, but if it's to leave Yerushalayim, she can force him to stay.
Echrami, I think he was probably talking about Bnei Brak, though. That's my guess, because that's where he lives. So and he doesn't mention the Yerushalayim point there. It's a good point. So again, this question I think could be subject to a little bit of debate of exactly how far to go with this. Again, I wouldn't tell you to give them nothing. I think that it's worthwhile to give them something, but again, you know, I don't know. I don't know how, you know, even for when it comes to a gabbai tzedakah in that type of situation, I don't know how much money you have to give to people that come around for Hachnasas Kala. Just be aware that in the Haredi world, though, it really is that they can't get married unless they get them an apartment. That's considered to be standard practice in that world. So if you're in the Haredi world, you absolutely understand and appreciate, you know, how important that is, even if maybe in our world we don't quite get it as much. But then again, it's just something important to know, and I think we'll leave it at that for now. The other points that are mentioned here in the Shulchan Aruch, he says, Yesh mish omer shemitzvas beis haknesses adif mitzvas tzedakah. Some people say that the mitzvah of building a shul is more important than the mitzvah of tzedakah. Mitzvah tzedakah on aram lilmo Torah, and the mitzvah of tzedakah to help people learn, kids learn Torah, o lecholim aniyim, or people that need medical treatments, adif mitzvas beis haknesses, even greater than the mitzvah of building a shul. So basically what we have here is a bit of an order list in the Shulchan Aruch that the shul, Beis HaKnesses, building that or supporting that is maybe even more important than regular tzedakah. Maybe what we call Hachazakas HaTorah, support yeshivas, and things like that. Maybe even more important than that. And also the case of supporting people with medical needs of the poor also might take precedence over the needs of a shul. So again, this in the Shulchan Aruch, keep in mind, is a Yesh Omrim. This is not an absolute. And this is not telling you that you have to use all your money for these purposes. What it means to tell you, though, as Ben mentioned before, that a lot of times you will end up, and it's okay, and maybe even, you know, recommended to use a nice amount of tzedakah money, either, you know, communally or individually, for these purposes as well, in addition to just, you know, stomp poor people or other organizations of poor people. And again, this is the basis for saying that you can use some of your money for other, you know, organizations other than the ones that just save lives, because of this statement in the Shulchan Aruch. And again, you know, there's obviously the custom is to generously support, you know, yeshivas and seminaries, probably the ones that you have a hashkavak identifications with, and not the ones that you don't agree with. But at least to some degree, that's definitely something which is very, very worthwhile. That's also one of the exceptions that you're allowed to spend more than one-fifth of your money for. If you have, you're allowed to spend more than one-fifth of your money for supporting Torah institutions, even though normally you shouldn't do that. Again, these are all sort of directions. Why don't you give me another 5 minutes or so, and then you'll ask questions, okay? I just want to get to one or two other very, very important points, and then we can ask a little bit more. Okay. How much are you supposed to give to each of these categories? So, basically, the Shulchan Aruch says, this is source number 7 on the source sheet. It says, Lo yitein adam kol tzedakosav ani echad bilvay. You should not give all of your tzedakah to one poor person alone, meaning that you have to find a way to divide up, to balance your tzedakah proportionally. He says here, if you take a look at source number 6, so the Aruch HaShulchan elaborates on that, and he says, V'lachin yir l'anias dati, he says, it seems to me, d'beirur ha'dvarim kachim, that this is the way that you have to explain this whole idea. D'vadai kol balabais o asher, that's certainly every balabais or wealthy person, and a saint tzedakah gives tzedakah mechuyav liten chelak la'aniyim harachokim, is obligated to give money to aniyim that come from far away. They're not necessarily in his own town. El de la krovav yiten yoser milishin krovav. He should give more to somebody who is his relative more than other people that are not his relatives. Similarly, all of them should be on the same level. What does that mean? What he's trying to say, again, with the exception perhaps of your parents that we mentioned before, but generally speaking, most of the time what this means is that the precedence, the kedima level that we gave before, was a direction. It means that in terms of those kedimas, that you should make sure that proportionally more of the needs of those people that are higher up on the list are supported. Not that you should spend all of your money supporting only people in your city. Not that you should necessarily spend all of the money only on your relatives and totally ignore, or not only, let's say you live in Chutz Laretz and you spend all of your money on your Eretz Yisrael. That's not what it necessarily means. What it means to say is that there's a proportion. There's some sort of sliding scale, and it's better to spend more of your tzedakah money on the cases that are on the higher up on the list, which again we mentioned before also could include supporting Torah institutions and medical needs of the poor and shuls and things like that. Those are also perhaps even more important than the tzedakah. So let's say you give 30% of your tzedakah money to your building campaign for your shul, or to support to do whatever else the shul needs for maintenance, or to one of your yeshivas, and then after that you go on and give some of your tzedakah to support people to some other organizations, then you give some of your tzedakah to people in Eretz Yisrael or Yerushalayim, etc. That type of list. That's again a general direction of how this works. Here, there are no absolute amounts. Okay, so everybody really has the opportunity and the right to decide for themselves exactly how much they want to give to different organizations or different causes. But again, as a direction, the level that we gave is generally speaking the better direction to go. One more point, and then I'll let you ask questions. The other point is basically, is it better to give more tzedakah to one person, or is it better to give lesser tzedakah to many people at once? Okay, that's the other part of this question, which also has to be answered. And the answer seems to be, based on the Shulchan Aruch that we said before, and this is elaborated by the poskim, that it's better to give less money to many aniyim rather than to give more money to one ani. And the reason for that is that the Gemara says in Erevin, which again I apologize, there's a lot of this stuff I managed to put together only after I already had the source sheet, that the Gemara says that anybody who gives all of his matanos kahuna, used to be that they would give the trumas and masers to the Kohen, the Levi, it's anybody who gives all of his things to one Kohen and not to many Kohanim, mevi ra'av le'olam. It's the Gemara in Erevin that he's going to bring famine to the world. What does that mean? It means it's very nice that you want to support one guy, but what's going to do with everybody else? There's many, many other people out there, other Kohanim and Levim that need to be supported. So if you choose one, then everybody else is going to fall by the wayside. And therefore, it's better to support everybody a little less rather than support one person a lot. That is the basis for the Shulchan Aruch that we just read in source number 7. The reasons for this are as follows. There's two main reasons for this. And that is what we said before. Number one, that many other people will still need it. We want to make sure that it gets a little bit more balanced. Number two, this is mentioned by the Mishnah on Avos. Paragimel, the Mishnah Avos says, "Hakolafi rov ha-ma'aseh," that everything follows the amount of your actions, or the majority of your actions. What does that mean? So according to the Bar Tanur and the Rambam there, basically what that means is that to foster inculcating yourself a midah of giving, that you are a giving person, the more times that you actually give, the better it is. So therefore, the more that you want to, Hashem wants to make us, merciful people by doing this, so that happens by having the more times you give. Even if you give one sum, which is a lot of money, that doesn't cause you to become more of a giving person. That's more done if you give more times. The more times you do the masa of giving, of tzedakah, the better it will be. That's not agreed on by everybody necessarily. The Maharal seems to have a comment where he seems to say that that's not the case, that really you should give better, more to one person. But the general acceptance seems to be here, that you should give more times less money to each one. Now, before we conclude this point and ask for questions, basically, Rabbi Taub, in the book here on page 64, and I also found just today also the tshuva from Marah Bazak from the Eretz Kadma Kol, where Rosenfeld learns, so he also has a tshuva about this topic. Basically, what they both say is that today you have to find a balance, okay? It can't be that you give your $3,000 of master money away by giving, $1 of tzedakah to every single person that comes to your door. Let's say you get, 3,000 people to come to your door over the span of a year. Let's say you get every single $1. That's beautiful, right? That's wonderful, right? You gave away all your masa money. You did 3,000 acts of tzedakah. That's wonderful, right? You've inculcated yourself with the midah of chesed many, many times. But the problem is, have you helped anybody? You haven't helped anybody. Every single person got a dollar. What does that do for them? It does absolutely nothing. So Orbit Tab says, and what they mentioned here as well, the suggestion is to try to find a balance that you don't want to give one person all of your money. You don't want to give every single person $1 so that it does not significantly help anybody. You want to try to find a balance where you give a lot of people, you know, people that come to your door, you give them a dollar or a shekel, whatever it is. And then there's a few people or a few organizations that you give a lot of money to, not a lot, you give a significant amount of money to, that you feel you're actually making a significant impact. Okay? That's very important as well, to feel that your tzedakah actually does something. So you have to find a balance in terms of how to take those two sides and really put them together. And the other point is also organizations. This is an interesting point that I thought of, which I hadn't seen really anywhere, but let's say you give a nice amount of money to organizations. So that organization, you know, they might, who knows how much they're giving to each per person. They might be giving to 25 different people. How do you know how much, you know, they're giving to each ani on the street if you give them $3,000, let's say? But I think at the end of the day, that organization is significantly impacted by your donation. So even if you don't know how much each poor person is getting, but the organization as a whole, if they're getting a sizable donation from you, that's considered to be a significant impact as well when it comes to this. Okay, that's basically, for this section, that's basically everything that I have to say. Now let's take some questions and see what we can do.
You know, just one comment on this last point, a lot for one or a little bit for many. I beg to differ. If by giving to one, you can do the mitzvah of day machzorot, then maybe you should give just to one.
Good. So that is mentioned. I forgot where, but that is definitely mentioned by a number of the poskim, that if you have the opportunity to give day machzorot to one, so then absolutely that might take precedence. Again, keep in mind that if you're going to give all of your money away to one person, you're still going to have, you know, this question of...
But you did day machzorot, which is the highest possible level.
Right, but again, at the same time, it's important enough that you have to give, you know, that you want to inculcate yourself with the midah of chesed, that if you just give one person, it's not necessarily going to help you so much. So the difference there will be, and again, this, I don't know how practical this is in terms of practical cases, bizman hazeh, but we mentioned last time that if somebody comes to you specifically, privately, asks for help, in that case, I think more... it seems to be more of the accepted opinion that in that case you would indeed perhaps give more of your money or a lot of your money just to fulfill day machzorot for that individual person. If it's a person that's going around and collecting from door to door, we said last time that you don't necessarily have an obligation to give him everything that he needs. And in that case, I do not think that you would say that even if you can give him day machzorot what he needs for everybody, that's not necessarily your obligation. And it's not necessarily something which is, you know, recommended in that type of situation where you know that he's collected from a large base of people.
Okay. I've got a question. When you say you should give more in the precedences, you should give more to one category rather than that, you look per poor person how much they're getting, or do you look per how much you are giving?
For instance,
there are much fewer poor in Yad Binyamin than in the world.
Excellent point.
If I give 50% to Yad Binyamin, 50% to the world, or 40% of Yad Binyamin, 60% of the world, I've given more 20 years.
Excellent.
Chutz la rochokim than 20 years, but each 20 years got much more.
Good. Okay. excellent point. So I would say, in terms of that, and I was going to mention this also, that you're probably correct. That doesn't necessarily mean, even if we say that ani ircha kod, but it doesn't mean that if you have $3,000 of maser money to give, that you should be giving $2,000 or even $1,500 to people in your own city when, you know, hopefully the amount of people that need money in your own city hopefully are not that great, and the amount of money that they need is not necessarily that great. So if every single person is giving $1,500 of their maser money to, you know, it's worth the few poor people in Yad Binyamin, then maybe that's not necessarily going to the best cause, to the best use. Basically, what we're trying to say, again, every case is a little bit different, but what we're trying to say is, as a general rule, that you want to make sure that the aniyim in your city are taken care of. Okay, what it means is that's a priority to make sure that they're taken care of. If that means that every person is going to give, you know, 100 shekel or $100 to the aniyim and still have $2,500 or $2,700 left over for something else, that's fine, as long as the people in your town are taken care of. But if you end up spending most of your money giving to, let's say, Yad Eliezer, or giving to Laman Achai, right, and some of the people in your own town are suffering that they're not getting what they need, that is definitely a problem. That is definitely, you know, going around Ani Ircha Kodmin, which is probably not so appropriate.
I had a question that might be off the title. Defining an Ani, I think I asked you this a year ago or so.
Right.
This is the case. We had, like, let's say, you know, he says, you have to have money. You're not an Ani if you have money for whatever, 6 months or whatever, living. But what I asked you is, let's say someone owns a home. And they have equity in the home. They have no money. Are they chayev to sell their home, or is that considered Ani? Because you know, half a million shekel or a million in a
good
home,
question.
But he has no liquid,
right.
You know, money.
Right. So I think we said again the question of who's an ani we discussed last week. We didn't discuss your particular case. In that case, so we didn't discuss last week, but it would seem to be, and I think I quoted you something last year. I don't remember. I have to look it up again. I think we said that anything which is considered to be, you know, again, this is not going to come out so clearly. Anything which is considered to be something which is normal to have, a normal property that you would have, which in this case, if you bought a house here, which was, when you bought it, was, you know, not, you know, ridiculously expensive. So we wouldn't necessarily say that you need to sell your basic necessities of life in order to be considered an ani. You know, we would say that even if you have other, if you can't make ends meet and you just have a house, but you need a house to live. So we're not going to tell you that you should go sell your house. Even, you know, if it's very nice and you'd have to move somewhere else, I don't think we would say that you have to sell your house and do that. And if you don't do that, then we can't give you tzedakah money. I think we would still say that a house is something which is important. We're not going to force people to get up and leave and sell their house and go move somewhere else, you know, which is going to be more difficult for them to live. And only then, if you can't make ends meet, then we'll give you money. I think we would say that, you know, if you have a house, we have regular things in your house that you need, then you would, what's it called? Then you would still be considered an ani. The question would be, if you have a lot of property, if you have a lot of things in your house that you don't necessarily use, that are extra, then maybe we would say that you haven't, you know, maybe you should sell those things before taking tzedakah from the community or whatever, because those things are really not so helpful anyway. It's not really something which you really need, but it's things that you could use for a lot of money. That's, again, alregalachas, I think that's what we would say, but you're right. It's still a bit of a question. It's not 100% clear that that would be considered an ani. Yeah, we discussed more of the rules last week in terms of the general rules. This is sort of like a very specific situation that we didn't get into. Okay, good. Any more questions at this point? Now, I had one or two other points to discuss before we finish up. Yeah.
Going back to your previous point about, you know, making sure that people in your town or city are covered, rather, you know, even if it's not necessarily a lot, but, you know, you have a problem with, say, with the example of $3,000, they can just give you $100 within the Gaza Yamin and give a cent. How do you change that equation in a city, let's say, like New York or any big city where the amount is limitless because, you know, there's just so many people with, God forbid, diseases you know, all sorts of, you know, yeshivas are constantly, you know, I mean, the amount of mailings and stuff you get from organizations is actually insane.
100%. So we discussed last week, the question of, do you have to respond to every single mailing that you get? And that we discussed. We said that was a bit of a machlokas. We said many posts can hold that you don't have to respond to every mailing or every letter or every phone call necessarily. When it comes to the question of Ani Ircha, so that's a good question. How do you define exactly what's Ani Ircha? What's considered a city? So Yad Binyamin is easy, but you're right. What is a city in New York or even in London, right? Even Yerushalayim, what's a city? Is the whole city part of Ani Ircha? Or do we say, well, no.